Who has more rights, you or your data? The answer isn't as obvious as you might think. As the world becomes increasingly digital, laws have emerged focused on data protection, data privacy, and data security. But Elizabeth Ranieris argues those laws have lost sight of the core human values we need to protect in the cyber world. Elizabeth is a lawyer and a senior research associate at the Institute for Ethics and AI at Oxford University. Her book is called Beyond Data: Reclaiming Human Rights at the Dawn of the Metaverse, and she joins us now to share five of her big ideas.
I'm Elizabeth Ranieris, author of the new book, Beyond Data: Reclaiming Human Rights at the Dawn of the Metaverse. I'm a data protection and privacy lawyer with vast cross-border experience, having practiced on three continents. I'm also an academic researcher focused on the ethical and human rights implications of emerging technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning, digital identity, and extended reality technology. My motivation in writing this book was both personal and professional. On a personal level, I share an anecdote in the preface about my former classmate Mark Zuckerberg and the origins of Facebook, which began as an exercise in pitting undergraduate women against each other to rate their attractiveness based on photos scraped from residential house directories. I describe the indignation and humiliation I felt at the time and the impression it left on me as I went on to practice law. As a practitioner, I grew increasingly frustrated with the limitations and shortcomings of data protection and privacy laws in addressing the kind of dignity-based violation I perceived at the hands of my classmate, as well as the increasingly complex challenges associated with new technologies over time. And as an academic researcher, I found the scholarship on technology governance to be too narrowly focused on privacy and free expression, missing a whole corpus of human rights and freedoms at stake in relation to digital technologies. In my book, I draw on this combined personal and professional experience and my academic research to argue that laws focused on data have never and will never effectively protect people. Instead, I advocate for an approach to technology governance based on a broader array of human rights and freedoms, well beyond what data protection and privacy, particularly in their current iteration, can offer. Here are five key insights from my book. Number one, we are obsessed with control over data. When we think of privacy today, we may reflect on our lack of it, specifically in relation to the ways we are tracked and surveilled online through the digital breadcrumbs we leave behind as personal data. Companies like Facebook, Google, and Amazon may come to mind, as well as concepts like surveillance capitalism or targeted advertising. We may recount the seemingly endless stream of high-profile data breaches exposing consumer data, health data, or financial data, or scandals like Cambridge Analytica. After all, we are said to live in a data-driven world powered by big data, in which data is the new oil and data is power. For some, this means that privacy is dead. For others, it means we must own our data to reclaim our privacy. Our laws are equally focused on controlling personal data, how it is collected, shared, stored, and otherwise processed. Laws that prescribe largely unread notices about how our data is used and seek meaningless, perfunctory consent to process it. Laws that require companies to keep our data secure and confidential from third parties while imposing few limits on how they handle it or what they do with it themselves. Landmark regulations like Europe's General Data Protection Regulation and copycat laws the world over set out data subject rights, theoretical rights of individuals to access, correct, erase, and transfer their data from parties who process it, which can prove difficult to exercise in practice, while the U.S. awaits federal privacy legislation. We seem to think that if we could only control our data, we would be safe from technology-related harms and abuses. Number two, privacy is much broader than mere control over data. Privacy is a much broader and older concept rooted in constitutional and human rights law. In 1948, in the fog of war, the UN General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which declared the right to privacy as a fundamental human right. During the world wars, population censuses, national registration systems, and conscription systems for military service became commonplace. The trauma of two sequential world wars, and in particular the Nazis' racially motivated atrocities, helped cement international consensus around human rights and shape the values that would inform modern-day notions of privacy. As with national constitutions preceding it, international human rights law conceived of privacy as delimiting the boundaries of one's family, home, and correspondence in relation to interferences by the state. In other words, privacy was deemed necessary to maintain zones or spheres around the inner or private life of the individual. to protect the individual's physical person, home, and family life, to create boundaries that are foundational to the exercise and enjoyment of other fundamental rights and freedoms, to protect individuals from discrimination and harassment, and ultimately to defend the individual liberty and autonomy necessary for a fully functioning democracy. Advances in computing and networked technologies in the second half of the 20th century would challenge these traditional notions of privacy, which before electronic or digital communications still required a physical interference or intrusion. The idea of data protection introduced in response, though derived from the human right to privacy, was much narrower. This is when our approach to technology governance took what I refer to in the book as the ICT turn, in the form of data-based governance, or the proliferation of principles, laws, regulations, and policies focused on data. Number three, modern data protection laws are based on an outdated view of the world. Early data protection laws emerged in the 1970s, in the early days of personal computers, a time when data about people was collected by known entities and stored in clearly delineated databases, both analog and digital, for clearly defined purposes. A world in which it was possible to map personal data flows at scale and to separate the online and offline environments. These laws hinged on the idea that with sufficient notice and transparency, individuals could meaningfully control the ways in which their data is accessed, used, shared, and processed for specific purposes. This original paradigm is still the prevailing approach codified in modern data protection and privacy laws, including the gold standard GDPR. But that world doesn't exist anymore. Instead, we live in an increasingly cyber-physical world in which data constitutes the built environment, flowing through the vast web of Internet of Things devices, sensors, AI and machine learning systems, including deep learning and neural networks, and increasingly virtual, augmented, mixed, and extended reality systems, at an unprecedented scale and speed, a world in which it is increasingly impossible to separate online and offline environments. Data supply chains have become so complex and convoluted that few companies have a handle on the data they collect, store, or process, or can effectively map their data flows. The idea that any single individual could exert any kind of meaningful control over their data in this environment is pure fantasy. And yet, our laws continue to propagate this view. Number four, privacy has become the handmaiden of tech-related harms and abuses. This gap between the world we live in today and the one presupposed by data protection laws leaves us vulnerable to a loss of privacy in its original sense, as well as deception, manipulation, discrimination, harassment, and more. It also allows companies to refashion the right to privacy in their own image as a technocratic exercise in the confidentiality and security of data. Until very recently, private actors have relied on largely ignored terms of service and privacy policies, as well as their asymmetrical bargaining power to exploit user data. As these practices are challenged, they are increasingly embracing privacy-preserving or privacy-enhancing technologies. A wide array of technical means, tools, and approaches to help mitigate data privacy and security risks, such as the risk of revealing sensitive attributes present in a dataset. Examples include homomorphic encryption, differential privacy, on-device machine learning, and synthetic data generation. When privacy is reduced to the mere privacy, confidentiality, and security of data, however, there are virtually no limits to what companies can do or the activities they can undertake, as long as they safeguard and secure any data they process along the way. In practice, this distorted mathematical or technocratic notion of privacy has incentivized dominant technology firms to bring more into their own ecosystems, deepen their vertical integration, and use privacy as a shield against competition, making us more vulnerable to control, manipulation, and exploitation by entities wielding unprecedented power. Data-centric legal frameworks are easy to circumvent, as demonstrated by the use of synthetic data for purposes that would be otherwise impermissible with the use of personal data. The more that our laws continue to concentrate on requiring companies to protect the privacy and security of data, the more we risk forgetting to protect the privacy and security of people. As companies continue to find ways to move beyond data, so too must our approach to governing digital tools and technologies. Number five, we need an approach rooted in a broader set of human rights. As data comes to permeate everything, we are at risk of asking too much and too little of data protection. On the one hand, data protection has become a kind of panacea for harms wrought by technology, acting as a kind of broad-sweeping, albeit ineffective, tool for technology governance, far more than it was ever designed to do. And at the same time, we are demanding too little. Our data-centric approach to technology governance has enabled dominant corporations to effectively reduce the once potent notion of privacy to a technical exercise in ensuring the security and confidentiality of data. In this way, privacy and the derivative right to data protection have grown divorced from the human rights framework and in turn lost much of their efficacy and power. There are more than 30 fundamental human rights and freedoms that apply to our human experience, whether at the hands of digital technologies or otherwise. As the real and virtual worlds continue to blur, eroding neat binaries like online and offline, and as everything becomes infused with data, there will be no such thing as digital or data rights, only rights. So long as technology governance is predicated on data or specific technologies, it will be wielded and shaped by those who control both, namely powerful commercial interests. Only when technology governance is predicated on human rights, which attach by virtue of our humanity, will it be framed by human interests. In fact, the human rights framework offers us the only truly human-centric, technology-neutral approach, and it is our best chance of moving beyond data. I hope you enjoy the book, and more importantly, I hope this book can help us shift the conversation about technology governance away from data and back to what really matters, protecting people.
Thank you, Elizabeth. That was Elizabeth Ranieris with five big ideas from Beyond Data, Reclaiming Human Rights at the Dawn of the Metaverse. You might also like our book bite for Our Data Ourselves, A Personal Guide to Digital Privacy by Jacqueline Lipton. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.